Blog Talk Radio.
All right, y'all, that was the soulful sounds of my good, good friend, Miss Terry Tobin, welcoming us all into the space with our V2V team song entitled Come Here. And I am so pumped about tonight. Y'all just have no idea. This podcast was a vision for me a mighty, mighty long time ago. And when I wasn't looking, just to show you how good God is, when I wasn't looking, He set people in my path from clear on the other side of the country, people I didn't even know existed at the time I had the vision for this podcast. But they came into my life and allowed this to be birthed. So tonight I humbly come before you and I welcome y'all to the official launch of the V2V podcast. I am your host, Dr. Marcy, America's Voice for the Voiceless. And this is where you can find me every Tuesday night from now on. In this very, very special place where your voices are heard, your stories are told, and your hearts can begin to heal. And during our hour or so together each week, you can expect some very transparent and sometimes uncomfortable conversations, but with amazing guests from all around the world, all across our wonderful country. And each one of them have successfully empowered their independence. They've fought through their demons, and they've managed to find their voice. It's my intention that something that is said tonight will compel you to begin to continue making sustainable changes in your own life and relationships as you proceed along your personal journey from voiceless to victorious. And we're going to hope against all odds that my voice holds out tonight because I've had a tickle all evening, but we're sipping on some hot tea. But as always, I want to ensure you that this is a safe space and encourage you to bring your whole authentic self. And if you have questions or comments, we would love for you to call in. The call-in number tonight is 914-219-0880. And on that note, I want to welcome and introduce tonight's very, very special guest, Dr. Shalissa Thomas. And I knew from our very first conversation that there was something special about this woman. And in fact, after I heard her story, I knew without a doubt that she was the person that I wanted to have on as the inaugural guest to kick this whole thing off. She truly exemplifies what it means to go from voiceless to victorious, from victim on to victory. And so let me tell you a little bit about her. I'll read her bio real quick, and then we will welcome her in to share her breadcrumbs with us tonight. Dr. Shalissa Thomas is a chemical dependency counselor and a certified life coach. In 2011, she and her husband, Timothy, co-founded Restore Incorporated, which is a drug, alcohol treatment, and behavior health services facility. And they provide various levels of care, including sober living, recovery housing, reentry services, intensive outpatient treatments, and a 28-bed detox facility. And if I'm not mistaken, and she'll probably share this with us when she comes on, but next week I believe they are doing the ribbon cutting for their brand new facility for Crisis Stabilization Center. Dr. Thomas has over 24 years of professional experience in stabilization and addiction recovery services, and she presently serves as the CEO of Restore Inc.'s for-profit and nonprofit programs. She's the mother of four adult children,
She resides in the icy cold Fairbanks, Alaska, but she's coming to us via Phoenix, Arizona tonight and has been graciously agreed to, on her extended holiday, to join us tonight to share her story and share her insights. Dr. Shalissa, welcome. And, girl, thank you so much for being on tonight. I really, truly, from the bottom of my heart, appreciate it. Welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on. I'm so honored to be your first guest. This is just such a blessing. I'm honored that you chose me to share this precious moment with you that we will remember forever.
Thank you. Aw, that's so sweet. And, y'all, let me tell you, she did it. She blessed us with a prayer before we came on air tonight, so I know we are in for a memorable evening. We're going to invest some time kind of diving into your story. You know, I titled this episode Victim to Victory because I was so moved when I heard your story on, you know, I think I believe our first conversation even, you just opened up so much and you shared so much of your authentic self with me, and it touched me in a lot of different ways. And that was really the reason I knew, like, once I heard your story, I was like, oh my gosh, like, you are the epitome of what it means to go from voiceless to victorious. So if you would, ma'am, would you kind of share with us sort of the beginning of your journey and sort of where you started, and give the audience, the listening audience, sort of an idea of what your background is, and just bring us up to speed.
So my background right now is in addiction and stabilization. So I'm helping individuals who are struggling with addiction or just mental health or just being stable, which can mean whatever their crisis is that they're faced with. It's what I am helping you, assisting you with the courage to overcome it or change some behaviors that kind of got us in that situation.
So kind of helping them create sort of action plans and giving them, kind of like we always talk about, giving them a safe space for them to kind of begin their journey.
Yes, and sometimes they need a place to live because they are also addicted while they're going through whatever crisis that they are facing. And so they might be in treatment, inpatient or outpatient, and sometimes that can be up to 6 months. Sometimes it's up to 18 months. So there's individuals who are fleeing domestic violence situations, sex slave trade. They're running from their dope dealer. They're running from the pimp. They're running from a lot of different things of life, and they're trying to find a safe place, and we are that safe place for those individuals who come to restore. And that's why Restore is called Restore, because we're helping individuals restore some stability in their lives.
I love that. I love that. Oh, we've got our first caller already. Ma'am, you must be popular. Let me go ahead and bring in our caller, and we'll welcome them onto the show.
Okay.
Good evening, caller. This is Dr. Marcy on with Dr. Shalissa Thomas. Thank you for calling in. What can we do for you tonight?
Hi, good evening, Mr. Sedana. I am listening in and just getting some information.
Well, hello, Ms. Shadana. Thank you so much for joining. You were an integral part of the birth and the conception of this podcast, so I am so glad to know that you are on the line with us tonight, and I appreciate everything that you do and all of your support.
Thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely. So, Dr. Thomas, can you kind of fill us in how you started Restore and what your background was? I know you mentioned some domestic violence, and I think, you know, that's kind of the world that I live in is with the domestic violence prevention and recovery work, and that was one of the things that kind of synergized us. Can you kind of tell us how Restore started and what your background was?
So Restore started, I had a brother who I'm adopted at birth, and so I wasn't with biological siblings. I was raised in a different home, a two-parent home. And I had a brother that we developed a relationship. And during the course of time, he was selling drugs, I guess, at some point, and he got in some trouble, and then he started using his own product. He got addicted. And his family shunned him. Like, no one wanted to have anything to do with him. It was a hardship for him. And I know how that feels, to be like you're on the outside and you have no one to talk to and you feel hopeless. And so during the process of him needing a reentry center, which there was none at the time in Fairbanks, Alaska, where I was, I told him that I would create one. So, because there's probably other males and females that felt the way he did. In the process, he committed suicide. And so I began on this journey to keep going to create a safe place for individuals to come and not feel hopeless. Because as long as there is hope, then change can begin. And if you're hopeless, then you don't really know where to start or where to look or what change even looks like, or if you're even willing to accept it, because you don't know how much you have to give up at that time, especially when you feel like you've given up so much to whatever crisis that you're dealing with. And so you need someone to really take time to walk you through this journey that you're going through, your crisis. And so Restore was birthed, and Restore started helping men and women who are dealing with crisis, who are dealing with substance abuse, who are dealing with reentry, those who are coming out of the correction facility, and to reestablish themselves with their families and to reestablish themselves in society and be productive and be stable. This time, do it all over again in a different way with some guidance, some assistance, some help, some teaching, you know, some good and bad days, because it's always not going to be good. And so you have to embrace the process. Sometimes when we're going through, we want the process to be quick. And we've forgotten that it took a while to get into that situation. And sometimes it's going to take us a while to get out of the situation. But we have to be patient with ourselves and allow ourselves this opportunity to grow and to change and to learn from our mistakes and to take those mistakes as lessons so we won't repeat those situations over again in our lives.
Yeah, I love that. One of the things you said was about the piece about the hope. And as long as there's hope, change can occur. And, you know, you and I are working on a collaboration for Challenge to Change for that very purpose, is to be able to kind of give people the tools to kind of structure how to begin making those changes, kind of to go along with the programs that you offer. So that's a powerful point. And I heard a quote one day, and I can't remember what I was watching. I can't remember if it was a TV program, a news show, or whatever. But what they said was, when you enter into extreme situations gradually, they don't seem extreme. And so when I heard that, I was just like, wow, because, you know, I think sometimes on the outside looking in, we look at people that are in, whether it's, you know, the throes of addiction, or whether it's in domestic violence, or, you know, they're trapped in whatever struggle that they're trapped with and that they're trying to navigate through. And we think, oh, my gosh, like, that's off the chart. That's insane. Like, how could you live like that? That's extreme. But it's extreme to a casual observer. It's not necessarily extreme to the person, because they kind of meandered their way into it. It wasn't like you wake up one day and you're sober, and then you wake up the next day and you're a full-blown addict, right?
Right. And it doesn't happen overnight. It's sort of like you were saying, it seems... So it's abnormal for you, us who are going through, let's take domestic violence, it's abnormal. But over time, you start reasoning with yourself. I was in a relationship for 11 years that was laced with domestic violence. So every day wasn't a bad day. There were good days and there were bad days. And then there were some extremely difficult days. And so when you have those extremely difficult days, you tell yourself is, okay, well, there's something I need to change or something I could do. So you shift the blame on yourself, never allowing you to look at the situation that you're in, that it's the person and you're in a bad situation. And so your mind starts to play these games with you where you're settling and you're trying to overcompensate and you're justifying the situation and the behaviors, and you're making it okay. And so it goes, you know, over course of time, you know, time is passing you by as you're enduring this unhealthy relationship, these unhealthy behaviors, and how you have built up coping mechanisms to tell yourself it's okay. And it's not okay. But the people on the outside are seeing it, and you know, they're saying, I could never do that. Like, how could you be in that? You know, I actually didn't have to deal with that part of it, because the 11 years that I went through domestic violence, that relationship, it wasn't something that I shared with anyone, and I didn't share it with my family. And so my family, when I did interact with my family, got to see the face that I wanted them to see, that everything was okay, because it wasn't something that was normal in my home. My parents never argued or yelled or hit each other. And so it was kind of something that startled me when it first happened, and it was gradual. You know, it started off pretty mild, you know, throwing a glass against the wall and yelling. And, you know, you're filled with panic and fright, so you don't move at that time. Fear has gripped you.
Mm-hmm.
And so fear gripped me at that time, you know. And the other person could see that it wasn't something I was used to. And so what do? They don't want you to panic and leave out and call the police. So they start apologizing profusely. The tears start coming down their eyes, and it looks very convincing. And so you just begin a cycle that is going to perpetuate and become worse than what it started off. And so you allow yourself to enter into this journey that, you know, everything in you at that time is saying, run. Girl, run. Don't look back. Just get out and don't go back. Some people do have that strength to do that. And some people, you know, they look at it as, no, okay, this is a one-time deal. It won't ever happen again. And it doesn't work out like that.
Wow, 11 years. I know that was one of the things that struck me, that you were able to, not so much that you were in it for so long, but that you were able to cover it up for so long. Because a lot of times, you know, family at least suspects, even if they don't have confirmation, they suspect. So for
mm-hmm.
you to be able to carry that burden and hold that in you, do you feel like what did you think would happen if you shared it with your family? Like, what was the thing that made you keep it secret?
I think the thing that made me keep it secret was that I was embarrassed about it. I was embarrassed, and I was grieving. You know, there's a grief that comes with you not being able to control your life the way you planned for it. There is a silent grief, and there's a, kind of a grief that you know you're dealing with. I was a very sad and unhappy person. I was trying to fix the other person who was, you know, didn't want to be fixed or healed, and I was trying to heal myself. And you can't heal in the same place that you're being hurt. It's just impossible. It's not gonna happen. And so I had to start self-talking myself into some positive, you know, you're better than this. Why are you here? Why are you allowing this to take place? I had to do a lot of soul searching, a lot of praying. You know, how long are you going to allow this to take place? How long do you want this to be your legacy? Do you want your daughters to choose someone like this and engage in a relationship for this amount of time and say it's okay? Because if I'm saying it's okay for me, I'm training them that it's okay for them, and it wasn't okay. And so I had to make some really serious choices. I think when I let my family in, the first time I mentioned something to my uncle, it had went from worse to bad. At this point, you know, I had decided I was going to break up with the individual. You know, I was like, I'm breaking up and this is it. I got my own place. We definitely separated. And somehow he assumed that I was dating someone. And so he came to the home where I was with, you know, the children, and he held me at gunpoint. And he held me for over an hour. You know, I was really scared, and, you know, at that point I was a new Christian, and so I was asking God, really, is this how this man now has taken everything from me, and now he's going to be allowed to take my life? And so, you know, I was just praying. I just wanted God to show up some kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened, after an hour, he just decided to leave. He just left. He just, seriously, he just left. He wanted to take me in the basement. I wouldn't go. He told me he was prepared to kill myself and the children, kill himself and the children, and I just wouldn't go in the basement. So he just left. And as soon as he left, what I did, I called my uncle, and my uncle, I told him what had happened, and he told me I have two choices to make. I'm either going to accept this and continue to live in fear, or I'm going to take a stand for myself right now and call the police and be free from this. And I got off the phone with him, and I called the police. And I called the police, and everything changed drastically at that point. He wound up getting two felonies. I made the front page of the freaking newspaper, wasn't happy about that. You know, my name wasn't in it because, you know, they protect the victims. Mm-hmm. But it was a hard situation because I had to go to court. You know, I wanted to take it all back, and I couldn't. But then I was looking at my children. I didn't want them to have to go through the things that I've been through, you know, for it to all come down to this. And so I stayed on task. You know, he wound up doing some time behind, you know, that whole situation, you know. And then he had the nerve to tell me that he hates me, that I ruined his life. You know, it's like how quickly we forget how we got to this point. You know, I was trying to fix it. I was a pleaser. I didn't have a voice. And so I started, you know, when I came out of this situation, once I got totally free, you know, he did some time. He went to jail. I went my own separate way. I told myself that I would never be in a situation like that again and that I would have a voice and I would be able to voice what is acceptable and what is unacceptable. And I am not going to settle anymore. But because I had that 11-year fight for so long, when God was placing someone in my life, sometimes you don't know when a good thing comes in because you're so used to fighting. You're so used to fighting for, you know, fighting for survival, fighting to be the center of attention, fighting to make sure that they're not a cheater. You know, there's so many things that you carry over. So I needed to be healed of all those situations. And so I didn't date. It took me a while, like 5 years, before I got back into that arena because I needed some healing. And I realized I wasn't healed. And I needed to love Shalissa again. Because at that point, I wasn't loving Shalissa because I was too busy trying to take care of somebody else. Regardless of how they treated me, I accepted it. You know, yes, domestic violence is brought on by one person. But I also was involved in that situation. And I allowed it. And I could have made all kind of escape plans, leave. And I didn't. I could only think of like twice where I thought about seriously leaving before it got to the point of being held at gunpoint, you know. But once I really made my mind up, my uncle gave me the best advice that really saved my life at that point. Because, you know, there's so many ladies who die in the midst of trying to leave the situation. And I really didn't want to be a statistic, although I was headed that direction. And so I was beginning to pray and thank God daily for strength, and I had to encourage myself and really prayer. Prayer really helped me. And just believing in God continuously, because, listen, that night I really thought God was going to just show up between the both of us. And so it really was my first manifestation that I believed God was real, because I don't believe that he had any intentions on leaving. I really believe that he was there to kill me, himself, and the kids. I really believe that. And so to me, that was a divine intervention that God intervened. And so I'm here to tell the story to help women to know that they don't have to stay in those situations. Some people are financially dependent on another person. Sometimes they just don't want to start over. Sometimes they don't know how to start over. And so it's a journey. Even, you know, people say just leave, just leave. It is a journey even trying to leave the situation or making the plans for what do I do once I leave? What do I do? You have to reprogram yourself not to be codependent on that individual. You got to reprogram yourself on how to think for yourself, how to value your feelings, how to value your thoughts. Because, you know, for so long, he was telling me that I was crazy and no one would want me. You got two kids, you know, and I was believing all of it. You know, self-esteem was just like at an all-time zero. It wasn't even a one. It was at a zero. And so I had you have to reinforce that, re-encourage yourself that what you think, What you believe, what you say matters. Your voice matters. I matter. And so once I start telling myself I matter, listen, I got a voice now, and it is a voice that it's not going anywhere.
Yes, honey. She said, I got a voice now. I'm about to use it. I'm about to use all of it. Ma'am,
yes,
we have another caller.
Down.
We have another caller, so I'm going to check in with the caller, and then I want to highlight a couple things that you said that really stood out to me, and then we're going to take a quick music break. But let me bring our caller on. Thanks for calling in. This is Dr. Marcy with Dr. Shillis on V2V. Who am I speaking with? Are you there, caller? Okay. Maybe they just called in to listen in. So some of the things that you said that really resonated with me, there were a couple things. Like one I wrote in, like this is a tweetable. Like Oprah always says, this is a tweetable, that you can't heal in the same place where you're being hurt. And I think so many times people think that they can just work their way through it and work their way out of it and without getting out of the situation. And I think that that is very, very difficult to be able to do. And then the other thing you said was about the piece about taking ownership. And when your uncle was like, you got two choices, you can either accept it or you can take a stand and stick up for yourself. But when you were talking about, as you were looking at the situation, you said, you know, it wasn't all them. Like, I have to take ownership for some of my circumstances myself. And, you know, that's one of the things, the challenge to change. We talk about, like, that accountability piece, taking accountability for yourself. And then the final thing was, this is something, when you said this, I was like, oop, when you said every day wasn't a bad day. And that's what I tell people all the time. You know, in 9 seconds we say, it's just not that simple. Leaving is just not that simple. Recovery is just not that simple. Prevention is just not that simple.
Right.
And that's right. Why. Because every day isn't a bad day. And so you have these moments in between where some of them are really, really freaking fantastic days. And those are the days that we want to cling on to and that kind of hold us in it. So thank you so much for that. I mean, you dropped, when I'm talking about leaving breadcrumbs for somebody to follow a path, girl, you've already given us so much already. So, but on that note, I am going to take a quick break, let everybody grab themselves a sip of something, and if you want to dial us up or if you have a question, the number that you can call into is 914-219-0880, and this is the V2V podcast. And we will be right back.
A woman should not live by the rules that's governed by the palm of a man's hand. Oh, baby, baby, no. Tell me who he think he is. Oh, tell me. Just because he thinks I'm big. Oh, baby.
Ooh, baby. That song.
Yes, ma'am.
The first time I heard that song, something shifted in me. Like, I ain't even
Come
playing.
On.
Like, that is,
Come
that
on.
Song is called Tell Me Who He Think He Is, and the artist is Trey Williams. And he breaks it all the way down. And I was just like, wow. So for those of you listening in, like I said, that was the song is called Tell Me Who We Think He Is. The artist is Trey Williams. And I want to welcome you back. You're listening to the V2V podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Marcy. And I'm here tonight with tonight's guest, Dr. Shalissa Thomas. And we are hearing about her powerful journey from victim to victory. And she has shared with us so many nuggets. If you want to call in, if you have questions, the number to call in is 914-219-0880. And I want to pick up and I want to ask, because not everybody has the courage to do what you did and call the police and report and do all that. And I'm going to say that from my own personal experience, because you know, when it happened to me and I was assaulted from my ex, well, there's two things that I want to go on. And one was you talking about you really realizing that God was real and you feel like he's what stopped him. Like he came to kill you and God stepped in and stopped you. And everything that I do is because I have that same belief for my circumstance. I don't know how I got out of the house, but I knew, and I prayed on it in the midst of it, and I prayed about it, and I told God, I said, if you let me get out of this house, I will do something good with the time that you give me back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a journey. It's been a journey. And so that just right there, you know, I think sometimes we underestimate the power that faith plays in our circumstances. Mm-hmm. I mean, we still have to do our part, but when it came to the, you know, the fact that you were able to report and all that kind of stuff, like when I went to the ER the following day, you know, they wouldn't let me, they wouldn't discharge me from the hospital until I spoke to the police, and I refused to give him his name, because when he left, the last thing he said to me as he was backing out, and I'm barefoot in the middle of the street, but I was on my phone, and I think he thought that I was calling the police, but I was so discombobulated, I called my friend and was like hysterical, but I wasn't talking to the police. And then when the police came, I was too scared to give him his name, because I told the police, well, you're going to go pick him up, you're going to release him in 24 hours, and you can't protect me. Like, there's nothing that you can do to protect me in the interim, because it wasn't a situation where he had a record or anything like that. And so I applaud you for having the courage to do that. I want to ask you, though, what do you think, because I think this is a great conversation, because you and I went different directions with that. And what was, in your opinion, what was the hardest part about leaving and starting over? Because you've made, like, your life now is completely a 180 from where that at that point. So what was the hardest part about leaving and the starting over process with your kids and all of that?
Well, one of the things, so I want to answer your question, but I want to make a comment to what you said about calling the police. Look at my mindset. The first person I called was my uncle. I'm in Alaska. I called Baton Rouge, Louisiana first.
Right.
Before even, and he had to direct me on my two choices that I had. You know, I still had those choices, whether my uncle told me or not, but I was not in the mindset to realize it.
Mm-hmm.
And so someone actually
giving
me sound advice, this is why it's so good to call people who have sound counsel. Versus saying, girl, you know what, just let him sleep it off, he'll be okay. There was no sleeping off that, you know, because that was like the second time he had pulled a gun on me. You know, it just didn't get that bad. He didn't say he was going to kill me that one time. It was just more of a, you know, I'm sick of you trying to be smarter than me type deal, you know. And so I think the hardest part of the journey for me was to release myself from regrets.
Mm.
From, you know, because during that process of 11 years, I had some opportunities that I let go of. I was still in college then. I was offered twice to be an intern student, and I was going to be in to go to Paris and, you know, go to school there in France. And so I turned it down twice. So I had some regrets when this was over because I was like, I had one daughter who was in gymnastics, and I knew she probably was going to be the best ballerina she could. And I had another one who was super smart. She probably would have been speaking 10 languages by now at that time. So I had some regrets, some things that I had planned for their life and my life. And so I had to release myself from the what ifs, the could haves, and the would have beens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard because, again, I'm grieving the process, the road that I took that wasn't part of my plan. And so I had to let myself off the hook. That was a hard thing. And then not wanting to be alone. I had a fear of being alone. No. He's been telling me for so long, nobody's going to want me. So I started believing mm-hmm. nobody is going to want me. You know, like who is going to want you? Mm-hmm. I'm the only person who loves you. So I started falling into the brainwash, you know, situation and believing it. And so I had, again, because I didn't love myself. My self-esteem was on a zero. And so I start believing that, you know, your family's going to think that you're washed up, that you're crazy. Look at this. You accepting this. This is your fate, you know. You might as well just go somewhere and die. So did I have suicidal moments? Absolutely, I had suicidal moments. Only by the grace of God that I stand here, sit here, can talk to you and say, by the grace of God, I made it. God had plans for Shalissa. He had plans mm-hmm. for me, and thank God that I didn't intervene with those plans and try to take myself out of the situation versus going through it. Sometimes when we're going through these situations, we want to escape crisis. We're tired of being addicted. We're tired of being victimized. We're tired of being abused. We're tired of being manipulated, so we want to escape it. And our escape is always to relieve ourselves from it by taking ourselves out. And that is not how to be victorious. You have to go through situations being a human being. There's going to be crisis. There's going to be situations that you face. And you have to face them. There's a quote by, his name is Baldwin, Alec Baldwin. And he said, not everything can be changed. But nothing can be changed unless it's faced.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I have to face some things. I have to face it. I can't hide from it. I can't let the embarrassment take me. You know, I was even embarrassed at what the kids are going to think when they grow up and realize, you know, what I've been through, how they're going to look at me. You know, it's just, mm-hmm. it was all those mental mind tricks. What are my family going to think? You know, once they realize what has happened. And so I had to let go of all that, and I had to be able to embrace my new journey. Sometimes when you go through stuff, we want to go back to the way it was. You can't go back to the way it was because the way it was wasn't working.
Right.
So I
Absolutely.
Have to embrace the new journey. And that's what I tell patients. They like, you know what, I want to go back to the way it was before I was using drugs heavily. Well, see, first of all, you are still using drugs, and so you don't want to go back to that. You want to be the new improved. I need to be a new improved bionic woman. And I had to reprogram the way I think, the way I talk to myself, the way I look at myself, the way I feel about myself. I had to reprogram me. And so I could look at life differently and not look at myself as existing. Because that's what it felt like sometimes I was existing, going through the motions and existing.
Mm-hmm.
And once I started, you know, those scriptures gave me life, honey. The one scripture that I really was quoting was, fret not for evildoers, for they soon will be cut down, and where there has the green grass. Honey, I was reciting that all the time, thinking, you know, seriously, I was thinking, God, you're going to take them out at some point. You
right,
know?
Right.
But I was misplacing the way it's supposed to be, right? again, right. I had to remove myself from this situation because I had allowed it, I had settled, and I had tolerated. And once I began to not settle, tolerate, because even though, let's say this man still went to jail, do you know he still wanted contact with me? He still wanted, he wanted me to tell the court system that I made a mistake. It wasn't a 9mm, it was a brush. You know,
oh,
and I listened to it over the phone as he was in jail. He called me from jail to tell me this. You know, and, you know, I'm still scared of him. Fear was real. I was scared of him. And so, and, you know, to be real about it, I loved him. I loved him. And I know at some point he loved me, but it was unhealthy. It was an unhealthy relationship that was killing me. It was taking the life from me. And so I had to say, you know what, this isn't love, and I don't want no parts of it anymore. And no, you did not have a brush. I mean, I liberated myself when I said that on the phone while he was in jail and I hung up. I felt like I just cussed him out by saying, no, it wasn't a brush, it was a gun. It just felt so powerful because I said that, and I was so docile. I wasn't saying anything or speaking up for myself. And so I was like, no. And so I went through the court system. It was scary. I made it through. And, you know, I stopped taking phone calls from him. It's over. It is over. It is over, and I'm just going to start over. And I started over. You know, this relationship had me homeless at one point. Like, I remember it was around December time before we got to the gunpoint thing. And I remember I was just so fed up with the way he was talking to me. And I told myself I was leaving then. And I went to the shelter with my two babies. And he was like, ain't nobody going to take you. I went to the shelter. I stayed in the shelter from December, January, February. And I got out on my birthday on the 16th. And, you know, got my own apartment then. And what happened? Forgot I was in the shelter and let him slide back in to my apartment. See, you know, just start tolerating. Just start forgetting because, oh, he's so remorseful. He's sad. Why do you got my babies in the shelter? Why are you doing this? You don't have to do this. Now you're trying to act mad and tough. So it was, you know, sometimes we listen to this negative naysay and we internalize it and we do make it us. Like, you know what, maybe I shouldn't have did this. Maybe I shouldn't have left. Maybe I should have just keep my mouth quiet and just do what he wants to do and just overlook all the cheating. Because the whole relationship was always me, him, and somebody else. If I was a singer, I could have wrote so many sad love songs. I could have got so much royalty for that by now because it was a real sad situation. You know, and I would know there was somebody else. And I think the most embarrassing thing is when they would come up to me and try to tell me about the relationship with him because I'm still in the picture. Like, if it's so good, then don't tell me because I'm already doing bad, sweetie. So,
already doing bad, sweetie. I know that's right.
So how did you tell me that?
Right. Like, keep that over there, sis. But how did you, so I know one of the things, like you talked about, like the fear of what your family would think, fear of what your children would think, all of that kind of stuff. How did your family react? Were they supportive? Were they questioning? Like what was that experience like? Can you shed some light on that for somebody who may be struggling with, you know, that's one of their big questions?
My family was very supportive. First of all, they were shocked. They were shocked and they had no idea. And they were very apologetic that they didn't realize that it was going on to that severity. My family in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, loved me. I talked myself out of talking to them. They loved me. They were supportive. And they told me that I never have to feel like I can't come to them with anything. I have an aunt. She's 88 years old. And at that time, she was much younger. And she was like, you never had to feel like that. I love you regardless. And so they were supportive. So these are things that blinders that I put in my mind to feed into, you know, my mask that I was masquerading, coping with. And so they accepted me and they loved me and I carried on with school and I started having dreams and visions for myself again. what do I want to do? I want to help people. I want people to not go through the situation I went through. I don't want my daughters to go through what I went through. I don't want my son to be with any women who are abusive toward them to go through things like this. And so I wanted to create a safe place. I wanted people to be heard, you know, really be heard. Because to me, if you're really helping someone, when I was talking to, I had a counselor at the time, and I noticed how she interacted with me. She would actually hear what I was saying, and she was like, okay. So she wasn't formulating an opinion or trying to wait till I finished my last word before she said anything. And so that really stood out to me, the way she was interacting with me. And I was thinking, she's really listening to me. I'm really being heard right. finally. And I was like, this is how I want to interact with people. Yeah.
That's
so
such a big thing. That's why we do this, is to let people be heard.
I used to tell my kids, too. I used to tell them, listen, if you're formulating an opinion while I'm talking to you, then you're not listening to me. And you know, it's funny because I hear them talk now that they're adults and they say those things that they were learning from me as
right.
they were growing up.
Right.
But, and so I said, that's how I want to be when I interact with people. I want to really hear what they're saying and go beyond what they're presenting to me, because sometimes they don't know how to put it in words. I really didn't know how to put it in words that I was hurting, that I was being hurt on a regular, and I'm scared, and I don't know how to get out of it, and I just don't know how. And so that's what I want to convey when people come into Restore. It's your safe place. I know you're hurting because you're here, because we're a stabilization center or we're a treatment facility. And so I hire staff based on their ability to listen, based on their compassion, and based on them able to be firm also, because they need to have a voice also when they're helping people. And so
right.
that is what our new stabilization center is. So we're going to be dealing with people from all walks of life. So there is no when they come in. It is crisis stabilization, because you're there because you're in a crisis, whether it's domestic violence, whether, you know, you're having a mental break because you got whatever A through Z going on, or you've been a victim, or you've been raped, or you've been kicked out somewhere. It's whatever they deem as a crisis. We're there to help walk them through this journey called life and the difficulty of it.
That is so. I just love you so much. Like, for so many reasons on so many levels. Like, I just think you are a phenomenal, phenomenal woman. You're an amazing mother. You're an amazing friend. And we actually have another caller, so I'm going to go to the caller, and then we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back.
Okay.
So let's just see. Let me go to this other caller here and see if they can join in. Hello, caller. This is Dr. Marcy. You're on B2B Podcast with Dr. Shalissa Thomas. Did you have a question or a comment?
No, I don't have a comment or a question. I was just listening into the show. And sounds like I missed part of it, and just trying to catch up.
All right, awesome. Thank you so much for listening in. And on that note, we are going to take a quick music break, and we will be back. And when we come back, Dr. Thomas, I want to we've heard about the victim side of it, and now I want to invest the rest of the show in talking about and celebrating all of your victories. I love for people to see that there is power after the pain, and there you can go from voiceless. You said, I didn't have a voice, but now I got one, and so I'm going to use it. And so when we come back, I want to talk about all about Restore. I want you to tell us all about it. I want to hear about the Stabilization Center and all of that when we come back from a quick break.
Okay.
All right.
Tears and the hurting brain. I know no one else can feel the space inside our hearts. So then why are we trying to make us break apart? If we love each other,
All right, we are okay. Back, and that was Miss Patty. If y'all didn't recognize that gorgeous voice, that's one of my heroes. When I heard her perform live, I was at Aretha Franklin's tribute in L.A., and I don't know what came over me. That song was Why Do We Hurt Each Other, but when Miss Patty came out, boy, listen, I was in the audience, and all of a sudden, like, this never happened to me before. Like, I was so... I don't even know what to call it. Like, I was just so moved by her that, like, tears just start pouring. I mean, Miss Patty just has that. She just has that effect on me. So that's Miss Patty LaBelle. Welcome back to listening to the V2V podcast. I am your host, Dr. Marcy, and I'm here with tonight's guest, Dr. Shalissa Thomas, who is dropping bombshells of information. I just shared this out on my social media, and I said, if y'all not on this podcast tonight, you are missing out. The things that you're sharing about your powerful, powerful journey from victim to victory is awe-inspiring, and I am so thankful again that you saw it in your heart to join us and to share your story. And I think we've got another caller. So before we jump into hearing about all of your victories now, let's say hi to this caller and see if they have any questions or comments. Okay. Hey, caller, I recognize that number. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, I just jumped on, and I just was just listening to your guest, and I was identifying with the fact that she was saying how she talked herself into how her family would judge her. And that's why she never went to them. And so that was like, whoa, I can totally see where many of us would do that. And so I was just wondering, in any of her programs, or do you coach, you know, do you guys help with that? Do you educate the families? Like, is mm-hmm. that being addressed and how to do that?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so... I help those individuals in that situation give predetermined responses. You know, just in case you get a family member who say, you know what, girl, you're just going to let that man be a man or that woman be a woman. And your response is, mm-hmm. I'm just saying, toxic is toxic, and no, I cannot. So we're helping with predetermined responses. We even have a peer support line where you can call in and get someone 24 hours to help you through situations. And yes, we also deal with families too. Yes, we do. We also deal with families because sometimes it's even hard to tell your family that you've been hurt, especially when you were so good at masking it. And so we sit down and we're their support, but we want the words to come from them because now is their time to have a voice. And so we're there holding their hand, in their support system, and they're saying it. However they got to say it, tears coming out, 20 minutes later, they said it. And so, and the family usually rallies around them and supports them. And so we're all about supporting and healing and, you know, helping them through this journey and not wanting them to be a quick fix or not be grieving. Because, you know, sometimes when we tell our family too, okay, now we want you to be okay. Now, it's been 30 days now. You know, they got that timeline clock.
Yeah.
We want you to be okay. You know, we want you to get back, put some makeup on, you know, start working on your health, lose some weight, get your mind right.
Right. Snap out of that.
It's a process. Right. It's a process that is healing. And so, you know, it's a step and it's a journey. You know, you ever played hopscotch? You know, it took you a while to figure out how to hit those little blocks just right, right? And that's what life is.
Right.
So you are hitting different phases, different blocks of life, and you have to embrace that where you are, and you got to tell yourself, girl, okay, I made it this point. I'm here. I'm doing good. You know, you got to encourage yourself. If you got to put little stickies on the wall, you know, you are super. I am a superstar. I am beautiful. I had to tell myself I was beautiful all the time because I was told so much that I wasn't, or that, you know, I started believing that. And so I had to tell myself these things, you know, to get to where I am. But once I was in that voice of recovery, honey, even when I started Restore, you know, there was a fight even to start Restore. But guess what? I had already been fighting, so now I know how to win a battle. And so you're not going to tell me no, because I'm not taking no for an answer. And so then the words no wasn't in my vocabulary that I can't do. I'd already told myself enough I can't do something. So now the only words I tell myself is I can't do it. And so, and I meant that I could do it. And so to start Restore, and, you know, to work with people who have been victims, who've had their children taken away because they chose the abusive person over, you know, the child, you know, that's a powerful and painful journey, you know, to realize, okay, I made a mistake, I want my child back. Because sometimes the court is like, no, you only got one shot. Well, you know, now you got to deal with, okay, so do you have visitation? So now you got to make the best of visitation. And so, yes, we have to help people, help them through some predetermined responses. And also, you know, sometimes look at what you do have in your hand and let's celebrate that. Because sometimes it's painful for a parent when they've lost their child due to something that they did have some kind of control over, but they chose not to act on it. And now they have to go back and try to make amends. Sometimes those doors open up and sometimes they don't. But you have to face it still. You can't run and hide.
Yeah, that was a great question.
Yeah.
I'm glad you asked that because, and then I just had one follow-up question to what the caller asked. Shalissa, when you mentioned that you all have a support line, is that available to the general population there in Alaska, or is that strictly for people who are already seeking treatment and are in the program?
So it's for the people who are in our program. And so, or they make contact with us somehow. If you go to our website, which is Restore, R-E-S-T-O-R-I-N-C, it's restoreinc.org. And on there is a live active page. There's a person that you interact with. And when you interact with that person, it sends like an email to them, or you can get a phone call right then and there. Or and it has this number on there. And what happens is, you've made some kind of contact with us to have that peer number. And that peer number has been so powerful. One night, I don't even know, I'm an early sleeper, and someone called me, and it was like 3 o'clock, and I had the peer support call. And, you know, it just broke me down. I used to tell the story and couldn't get through it. And the lady called, and she said, I'm in the crack house. Literally, I'm in the crack house. And she's like, I don't know what to do. I'm about to buy it, and I know I'm going to lose my kids. She's like, I don't know what to do, Shalissa. I said, run. Right now, you just turn around and you start running. And she actually started doing that. That whole dynamic changed. It changed my life, how I interact with people on the peer support line, because she actually started running, and I could hear her running, and I could hear her breathing hard. And she was like, and then she wasn't running by herself. The person who was with her was running with her. It was another young lady. And that young lady said, I've been trying to stop doing heroin for so long. This is the first time I ever ran something. What do I do? She said, we're running. I said, well, listen, I can go pick you up right now. And I had staff then at that point, but, you know, they were care a lot there, so they wanted to save everybody who needed care. And so they went and got them where they were, and they took them in and put them in the inpatient. That night, their journey of recovery started, you know. And so I didn't expect that. You know, when I started the peer line, I didn't expect people were going to call me from the trap house or the dope house. You know, I was just thinking that they would call when they're walking in the court or they were just dealing with some other kind of crisis. And so all I could think of was just run because, you know, you can't, you know, you're in the midst of people lighting up around you and you got a crowd problem. You know, you can't say, you know, just pass it to somebody else. You're going to have to get out of that environment. Again, you can't heal where you're being hurt. And so she ran and she was cleaning for, you know, a couple of years. And then she went back to, you know, intervening. But the thing of it is that night her life changed and she ran and someone else was running with her and they ran and they left. And so that peer support line is pretty, it is important to me because it's the people who at nighttime, they don't have a voice and they're scared.
Yeah.
And sometimes people are really in deep thought late at night because they're contemplating life at that point. Do I keep going with life? Do I end it? Do I try to overdose by using? Because sometimes people overdose on purpose. And so we're there to intervene, and we're praying. You know, we start our day off at prayer with Restore. There's 33 of us right now, and we're about to – we need 17 more staff for the new stabilization. And so we're starting off with prayer every morning, and we're praying throughout the day because it's heavy. Sometimes it is heavy things that we hear. And we need God to anoint us, God to give us wisdom, God to give us grace to deal with the individuals. Because we never want to be in a situation that we're like, oh, here they come again. They're never going to change.
Right.
Or they're never going to leave that man. No. Every day is a new day. If the word of God says his mercies are new every day, then we also can look at them as this is a new day and we don't know what's going to happen for them today. We're going to embrace it, and we're going to speak positive in their life, and we're not going to speak negative. We're the people who are going to help you, assist you with the courage to change your life. That is what our vision is. That is what our mission is, and we're going to stand by it. And we do that, and we fight for your life just as well as you're fighting for it.
I feel like when you were talking about, first of all, your transparency tonight, because I know when we talked about this initially, you're like, I'm kind of uncomfortable about, you know, talking about this on the show. And your transparency and your vulnerabilities tonight are, you're changing somebody right now. I don't know if you know that. We don't know who it is, but God knows who it is. And so your transparency and you're willing to be completely vulnerable is exactly what this is about. Is about giving that space for hearts to begin to heal. We can't fix everything in one night, but certainly your vulnerability. And what I heard from you when you were talking about the peer support line, it made me think, because earlier you had said that some people just, you know, they want to escape the crisis. And like you were saying, sometimes they'll even overdose intentionally just as a way to make the pain stop. And I feel like you're by creating that support line, you're almost stepping in as an intercessor for them. And you are that voice. Like, sometimes people, if you're not familiar with prayer, like it took me a long time to figure out what prayer even was, and I had to define that for myself, but I was afraid, like, because I had always grown up in a church hearing my grandmother praying, and they prayed perfectly. And I'm like, I don't know how to be doing all those long prayers
singing.
And saying all that extra long stuff.
And singing with it.
So I
just
felt
made
like
it beautiful.
I didn't, you know what I'm saying? And so I felt like I didn't pray right. And so I think sometimes when people hear, you know, the term prayer and the same thing with meditation, you know, meditation is a technique. I think people think that there's a wrong or right way to do that. And what I feel like, what I was feeling as you were telling it and, you know, you trying to make me cry, and I told you about I don't like crying, but what I heard was that if they can't, if they're afraid to pray, they don't know who to talk to, who to turn to, that's the voice. And sometimes you just need a voice, and and that's that intercessor, that's that disruptor, to be able. When you told that girl, just run. That was not no profound, like
no, honey.
You know what I mean? That was
that was visceral. That was from the gut. It's run.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think, I know for me, I used to feel like if I ran, I wouldn't know when to stop. And I used to feel the same way about tears. And I felt like if I let them out, I would never get them back. Like, they would go and never stop. And so,
and that might be what you needed.
And it may be, but when you're somebody who's afraid of those things, you're afraid of emotions, you're afraid of, you know, you're afraid of reality, because to your point earlier, we're good at putting up that mask and making everything look like it's all peachy keen. Well, if all of a sudden I'm sobbing in a pile on the floor, my mask is going to fall off. And now what do I do? Because I don't know how to operate in the real world without the mask. And so I feel like that's such a valuable tool to be able to give somebody just a voice on the other end, somebody that's not attached to your circumstance, somebody that's not going to judge you, somebody that's not going to criticize you, somebody that's not going to tell you that you're stupid or you're wrong or you should have done this or you should have done that. They're just there.
Right.
And sometimes that's where healing starts, is just being there.
Yeah.
So, oh my gosh, like,
or
girl,
support.
I don't want to be crying like that. You got me emotional now, so.
And prayer can be simple. Ooh. If you got to say, God, help me every day, that's your prayer, that's your voice, God hears you, right there, right there, God help me. Or even if you just got to say, help me. You're asking God to help you. He's there.
Right.
And so sometimes we do put limit, you know, these kind of restrictions on people and make it, you got to do the seance, or you got to, you know, light the candle, and, you know, and come on, you got to get it out what you can. God, I don't know what to do.
Right.
And then he'll send someone some sound counsel. You know, we need sound counsel, because the thing of it is, sometimes you can't go to your friends, because your friends are sometimes in the same situation you're in. You may know of it or may not know of it. So you got to go to people who can really give you sound counsel, because you want help. You don't want to remain the same. You want to change. And there's a pain in remaining the same, like no other, because you see yourself, you want to grow, and you don't know how. And that is why I had to just keep pushing towards excellence, keep pushing myself toward not saying no, because I knew that I was better than this and I was destined for greatness, and I had to not give up. And so I really told myself, from going forth, you're not going to accept no for an answer, and the only word you're going to say is, I can do this. And it was, I can do this. When I started Restore and I was sitting in meetings, you know, talking about what we're going to do, and, you know, I'm a female and I'm a minority. And so sometimes I wasn't heard. Because,
and you're in Alaska.
I can do this, and I'm not taking no for an answer. And so I just kept knocking on that door, and I kept getting all the license required and everything that was needed to go forth. And, you know, and I just said, well, you know, you're going to see me win this. Victory is going to be mine. And so I didn't take it offensively, because I knew what I'd been through and I knew where I was going. At this point, it cannot go back to where I came from. And so, and I knew what I wanted to do at this point. And so I just kept going, you know, chipping away at those things that I wanted to do, you know, even when they were ignoring me because I was a female woman and a minority. I just kept chipping away at it. Okay, so we're a reentry center. Okay, what's next? So everybody's coming in on reentry. God, they're addicted. Oh, I need to be able to do drug counseling. I need to be able to help them overcome their addiction. Okay, so I need to be a treatment facility. Oh, you can't be a treatment facility unless you have a doctor. Really? Where's that in the regs? I start reading regulations. I start understanding regulations, rules. I start writing policies. I wrote all our policies with help of great staff. Let me tell you, we became a drug treatment facility, outpatient residential. And then, you know, I said I want to do residential. Then we became residential facility. And so then I was like, you know what? People coming in, and I need a detox center. I need to be able to help people detox now. That can, you know, then they can move into the residential. So you know what? We created a detox center. And so that's the 28-bed detox facility and the crisis stabilization center. And so that opens up our goal for that, our open house ribbon cutting is January 13th. And this is huge because I didn't think, you know, when you have a vision, it starts spiraling, mm-hmm. bigger than what you saw. So it had gotten bigger than, you know,
yeah.
my dream was. My goal was to be the best facility that, you know, that we would help and heal people. Now I'm becoming an outstanding, phenomenal, and big facility, you know. And I'm like, God, mm-hmm. thank you. We're going to serve a lot of people, and this is what we're going to do. We're going to help lives. And so that stabilization center is going to be, because we don't have a stabilization center in Fairbanks, so we're the first stabilization center. And so wow. I'm honored that, you know, we got our approval and we can do this and we're licensed and we're going to, you know, God's going to have us and we're going to have people healed and delivered. We're going to see some freedom walkers here that's going to be, you know, walking in recovery and telling their testimony and how they overcame, mm-hmm. you know. From services
you
that
know,
help
you said,
them.
You said you were thinking in your vision, but God don't have small visions. And so
no.
we shrink the vision. Like God knew when you were going through everything you were going through that you were going to need those lessons in compassion and those lessons in situativeness and being able to fight for yourself and be able to use your voice and to read those regulations and stand up to people who normally we would step back and say, oh, well, they're the authority figures. But you're like, no. I've been through worse. So
yeah.
because I've been through worse and I came through it, I fought the fire, I fought my demons, I found my voice, God already knew. His vision was already big. We shrink the vision. And that was one of the things for me, too, I had to think about when I started my DV work. Like, I always got intimidated by how big it could get because
yeah.
my vision was small. And then when I realized, mm-hmm. like, no, you're called and qualified. You're already anointed. You're already ordained for this. Like, this is your assignment. And if this is your assignment and God said so, then it's going to happen. And all you got to do is say yes
mm-hmm.
and walk it out. And so when I started
mm-hmm.
to do that, it was like people come into me. I think Shadana is still on the line. She was one of the pivotal people. Like, I didn't know this lady from nothing. She saw something I said on
wow.
Facebook, passed my name to somebody else, and da-da-da-da-da, now here we are. But God already knew the vision. And so
yeah.
for you now, you know, like the thing that's so powerful about this, you went from less than 20 years ago being
mm-hmm.
homeless. Living in a woman's shelter with your two kids.
Yes.
And now you're in a position where you're providing shelter. Come on now. Who would have thought? Would you would have ever thought sitting in
Mm-mm.
that shelter with your babies that you would be
Mm-mm.
providing shelter for somebody, that you would be an intercessor
Mm-mm.
for somebody?
Mm-mm. I was so depressed at that point. I was like, God, my prayer was, God, let me make it through this day. But, you know, that's how God do things, you know. That very
right.
shelter, I actually work with that shelter, you know, the rescue mission. I work with that shelter and help
wow.
individuals, you know, and donate to it. And donate to it, you know. It is just amazing how, you know, when there's a calling on your life, and this is why when I was graduating, I said I'm going to continue to answer the call, the mission and the mandate. Because I am commissioned
yes.
to do what I am doing. I don't just know anybody can do this. Your heart got to be in it, and you got to be called to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm not saying everything is perfect. There are some good days and bad days. But I am dedicated to it, that I know that I'm called.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm called to it, that I have angels all around me to make sure that this is carried out. Because there's lives on the line. And I know that I'm a part of a plan to help lives be restored. And this is serious business. When people come into to either one of the facilities, because there are seven of them, we say, this is a life. and do treat this life how you want to be treated. And so that's our motto. Mm-hmm. You know, you talk to them with dignity and respect. I used to have a daughter that would come in, and she said, regardless of how they act, we treat them with dignity and respect. And, you know, we just carried on that little motto. Because that's what they, you know, just because you come in and you're acting any kind of way, you don't know what they've been through, why they're yelling, why they're emotional, why they're erratic. And if we say that we have the goods and we have what you need to help you stabilize, then we can't fall into those pitfalls. We got to be able to calm you. We got to be able to soothe you. We got to be able to let you know that it's okay, that defense mechanism, you don't have to have it here. It's okay. You're safe. And pretty soon they'll drop that they're safe. And, you know, we don't have anybody fighting us for recovery because they know that we're safe.
Right. I think that's a great place to end the show tonight on that statement that this is a life and treat it with respect. And yes. I think if unilaterally as humans, you know, I'm big on, you know, putting the humanity back in to the human race. Like, I think we've lost our humanity. We've lost our compassion. And I think if we could take that simple nugget, I think if people don't walk away with nothing else, to take that this is a life and treat it with respect, and regardless of how their behavior is showing up, there's something else going on in there. And that's not to suggest that we tolerate people's foolishness or, you know, resign ourselves to being mistreated. That's not what I'm saying. But understanding that when you're watching somebody go through something, even if you walked in similar shoes, you're not walking in their shoes. So you're not going to handle
Absolutely.
It how they handle it. You're going to handle it how you
Right.
would have handled it. So as we wrap up, we got just a couple minutes left. But what advice would you give to someone who is either in an abusive relationship, has come out of it, maybe they've been through addiction, but now they have their own dreams of starting a business because you did that. What would you tell somebody?
First, I want to let them know that it's okay not to be okay. And you can start from where you are. You can go beyond your now. You can go beyond your now, and it's okay not to be okay. You will get past this, and you're going to go beyond your now. And that is what you have to believe.
I love that. Go beyond your now.
Mm-hmm. Go beyond your now. I thank all the listeners and the viewers, and I can't wait for them to see, you know, the journey that we're about to take with our book that we're writing, the curriculum.
Yeah, Challenge to Change is going to be a game changer. And, you know, that's just another example of God putting his hands in it, like to be able to send you. Like, the book was one thing, but then when you and I linked up and we're like, oh, my gosh, like we could do this and we could do this, it just became something completely different. So I want to say thank you so much again for your transparency, for the breadcrumbs that you dropped along the trail. Somebody is going to be able to find their way because you did that. And I always say that survival is a responsibility. And I always say I feel like it's my duty to reach out and, you know, extend a hand to the next person, somebody else on their journey. And I would say emphatically that you have given all of our listeners some things to think about. And I want to thank you so much for, again, stepping outside of your comfort zone, sharing your story, sharing so much inspiration, so much information. And I know that wasn't on your, this was not on your bucket list of things to do. And being trapped here in Phoenix while you're on holiday. Absolutely.
Thank you for having me. I'm so honored to be on here and be your first guest. And everyone remember that you can go beyond your now.
Go beyond your now. So on that note, guys, as a reminder, if you have a story that you'd like to share, some breadcrumbs of your own that you'd like to drop, or if you have ideas about shows, things that you'd like for us to talk about, if you give me the topic, I'll find the guest, and we're here to serve. And you can go to our website at 9seconds.org/V2V, as in Voiceless to Victorious, and complete the online form. There's also, that's also where I'll be posting links to the replays. And in the meantime and in between times, guys, this is Dr. Marcy, your voice for the voiceless, and tonight's special guest, Dr. Shalissa Thomas,
CEO of Restore Inc., and wishing you all health, safety, and success until we link up again next week right here on the V2V podcast. And so with that, I will say good night.
Good night, everyone.